Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. How are you all today? Okay. For many of you, this is a new location. So we've been having meditation classes here on Wednesday. I think they are having the Medicine Buddha. Is it? Huh? Rope's offering, is it today or next week?
Tonight.
Tonight. So in the morning they would have it also. So the whole shrine hall is actually occupied and set up. Yeah. So then I think today's date? 21st. Then I think there's a couple of more days where they have other programs, so we've managed to rent the hall here, Kampong Senang. How many of you have been here before? How many of you have not been here before? Majority, huh? Yeah. So after using the hall for meditation classes, we find that it's quite a nice environment. Yeah, and it's quite convenient, just a walk down and it's the MRT station. So welcome. Let's see our usual ritual very quickly. On the left, today we have swapma. Usually on the right are all the season parking holders. Today the left are all the season parking holders. On the right, any newcomers? Anybody who is new? Hello. Okay, maybe we go from the back first since the mic is passed to the back. Tell us your name and how you got to know about this group. And how did you get to know about the program? Oh, you saw my face, huh? I see. I see. Welcome.
Just accompany my wife here.
Ah, I see. And
my name is Vincent.
Your name is Vincent? Welcome.
Thank you.
And the fine young gentleman there?
My name is Jed.
Jed. So who do you come here with?
Parents.
Your parents. Did they force you to come here? Yeah, don't worry, you are fine. Welcome. But wait, how old are you, Jed?
13
years old. Very good. Huh? 16? 13, right? How come you become? Are you in Sec 1 or Sec 2?
Sec 1.
How come? Where do you hear Sec 2 from? And yes.
Hi, I'm Mrs. Lim.
Hello.
Just happened to Google for free Buddhism class. So I found this to register for it.
I see. Is it from Eventbrite or?
Yes, Eventbrite.
I see. Welcome.
Husband, I'm still from my
hostel family. I see. Good. Welcome. And hello, the two kids.
I'm Jiale. I'm 15.
Yeah, 15. And
I follow my parents.
I see. They walk in front, you walk behind.
My name is Sirin.
Your name is?
Sirin.
Jiale and Sirin. And how old are you? 18 years old. So what are you studying? What are you studying now? Like which level? What are you?
J2.
I see. J2, October. A levels is around the corner?
Started already.
Wow, so you are in the midst of your A levels. What is your subject combo? Maths, physics, chem. Chinese studies. Chinese studies as in like the higher Chinese. Study about China. Chinese, literally Chinese studies. Wow. So you're going to do political science or something?
No.
Okay, welcome. It's been a while since I was 13 or 18. Yeah. JC is quite different now. I think you guys call it the H1, H2 or H3, right? Yeah. In our time, it was either you took A-level, take it as an A-level subject, or you took S paper. Yeah. I took physics and double maths. So it was F-maths and maths C. Supposed to be an easy combo because you just have to study mechanics and you can answer two questions from each paper. Yeah. Fun time. Remember after that, of course guys go to NS, and then in uni I took computer engineering in NTU, and in the first lecture for discrete mathematics, the professor asked, how many of you took further mathematics? And some of us raised our hands, and then the rest didn't take. And the professor basically said, those who didn't take further mathematics, you better pay attention. Because for further mathematics, it's actually one subject, one A-level subject for 2 years, right? And that is covered as part of discrete mathematics over the next 13 weeks. So it's actually just a small part of the whole subject. Yeah, and yet the 2 years subject is covered in just a few weeks. Yeah, so the professor was like, those who didn't take F-maths, you better pay attention. Yeah. It's quite crazy how much our human mind or brain is capable of. Yeah. 13 years old. That was the time I started writing games. Yeah. Do you play games? You play games, huh? Then after that, no. It's okay, ignore your parents. I'm here. After that, I can't protect you, lah. Here, you're under my protection. Do you play games? No. So, you don't play games, Why don't you play games? Oh. So, who? Father or mother? Huh? Mother. So, do you think father allow? Actually, they are together one. Same one. No. Before you are born, they are together already. So, they confirm together one. Yeah, but actually, how about Jia Le? Do you play games? You play games, Wow. So, your father, mother better. Adopt. No lah. There was once I asked this Amor kid in front of the father, do you love your father? He said, yes. Very cute. Yes. If your father let you play with your toys, the kid was in primary school. Do you love your father? If your father let you play with toys? Yes. What if your father don't let you play with toys? Do you still love him? No. Yeah. At that age, it's very cute. Yeah, very, very spontaneous, candid answer. Yeah. So, but that's how we usually are. Even when we grow up, you know. Yeah. When people let us do what we want, then this is my friend. I like you. Don't let me do what I want. I don't like you. But is this the only measure? Yeah. Is this the only measure? Yeah. Is our relationship with others based simply on whether the person give us what we want, allow us to do what we want or not. Is it based solely on that? Mm. What games do you play, Jiale? Computer or mobile games? Or both? Both, huh? Yeah. What kind of games do you play? First person shooter? Strategy? Simulation? RPG?
Anything.
Anything? Yeah, let's just say that I'm like the... I belong to the generation who grew up with games. Yeah. In my old time, we didn't have mobile phones. Yeah. This don't exist, literally don't exist when we were growing up. At some point, mobiles or cell phones started to appear, but it looked more like that, maybe half of this, more like that than like this. We had something similar. It's called a Nintendo Game & Watch. The size is very similar, actually. Yeah, but no color, black and white. Yeah, and there's only usually two buttons at the bottom, and then two roundish rectangular button on the top, game A, game B. Yeah, and usually there's a piezo speaker that makes funny noise. Yeah, that was games for us. Yeah. But today, hope I didn't get you all excited about games. Yeah. But games is something that is very part and parcel of childhood. I sometimes have parents bring their children to see me. They hope that I can convince their child not to play games. Yeah. But you know what? You know what I tell the parents and the kids? Yeah, I tell them, what's wrong? Yeah, what's wrong with playing with games? Yeah, do you know why your mother don't let you play with games? Okay, before you are sitting very close, so can have some danger. But a show of hands, adults, let's look at the adults. How many of you play games? You see? Yeah. As I said, when I was your age, I was writing games. And I tell you, writing games is even more exciting than playing games. Yeah. It's like watch a movie versus making a movie. You know? Oh, another level, no. Yeah, even more exciting. So when I was your age, every time I see a new game, I get excited, but not the same way as most kids. They get excited wanting to play it. I get excited wondering how it's written. Yeah, and that's even more challenging and exciting. Yeah, but many times it's hard for us to fathom why our parents don't let us play games. Yeah, I kind of had was actually belonging to my auntie that I borrowed on a permanent basis until I spoil it. Until I curiosity got a better of me, I open it up. I literally open it to see what is actually inside. Yes. Nothing wrong with playing games, really. Yeah. Otherwise, the government would have banned it, isn't it? Yeah. So, why not play games? It depends on whether you are playing the game or the game is playing you. So it depends. If let's say all the participants here, they play game, play until at night they don't sleep. Play until in the morning they wake up late for work. And then when they go to the office and continue playing games. Yeah. Raise your hand again. Those who play games. If you go to your office, can you still play games? Cannot. What happens if you get caught playing games at work? What happens if you get caught playing games at work? Huh? Hey, you all don't know. Go and try tomorrow, Monday. What will happen? If your game playing is out of control, that's a key thing. Yeah. You know, when you play games, it's all about control, isn't it? You control a character to move around, collect points, avoid the enemy, you know, shoot the enemy and stuff. It's all about control. Yeah. But sometimes when we play games, we play until we let the game control us. Yeah. And that's part of the problem. Yeah. But if you're interested in writing, look for me after this. But you must be prepared, you know, because once you if you think that playing games is addictive, writing games is even more addictive. Yeah. But writing game is just part of writing programs. Yeah. Programming is a very addictive process because it's a very interactive process and it gives you a sense of control. And talking about control, we have to come back to our class. So where are we? Today is part of the series that we cover this sutta. In the Buddhist tradition, we have the teachings given by the Buddha or his disciples, and they are formulated in a collection that we call sutras. Yeah, the word sutra literally means to thread. Yeah, to thread. The Buddha used it as a metaphor to describe how if you have two pieces of leaves or cloth, it's easily separated. But if you use a thread to thread it together, then they are secure. Yeah, they don't move around. So in the Buddhist tradition, we use this term sutra to describe those teachings, the words spoken, to describe the truth, describe certain aspect of our world, our existence, that if heard and then reflected upon and then applied, can help us to become what? To transform our body, speech and mind, to become threaded, aligned with that of an enlightened one. Those words that can do this function is considered sutra. Yeah. Of course, sutra is not an English word. Yeah, it's a Sanskrit word. Why? Because the Buddha was not an Englishman, yeah, and he's not a Singaporean also, not even Chinese. So this sutra, called the Diamond Sutra, we started some weeks ago. For those who are new here today, you can actually go onto YouTube, search for SG Cultivation. We have the series recorded and posted online. Yeah, so you can catch up on the past episode, if you will. So where are we? I'm using this book that my teacher gave the teaching on this sutra. So we are at one of the pages. We have covered the title and also the translator. We have started off on the sutra. Ru Shi Wo Wen, about 2 weeks ago, we covered the opening. Thus have I heard. Ru Shi Wo Wen. Then, Yi Shi, Fo Zai Se Wei Guo, Ji Su Ji Gu Du Yuan, Yu Da Bi Qiu, Sen Qian E Bai Wu Shi Ren Ji. So we actually cover up to this Yi Shi, and then I think Se Wei Guo we covered as well. So this Yu Da Bi Qiu, Sen Qian, Zong Qian, E Bai Wu Shi Ren Ji. So we stop roughly around here. So we continue from this part. So this was a time where it was not modern times. Yeah. When was this? It was some 2,500 to 600 years ago. Yeah. Just to give some perspective, Singapore, how old is Singapore? How old is Singapore? 53 years old. Yeah. So how long ago was this? This is 50 times longer. Yeah. So imagine how long Singapore is. Not that long really, but it was 50 times earlier. Yeah, that's how long ago. So long that handphones don't exist, computers don't exist, even lighting, electricity wasn't managed yet. Yeah. It was a time where even countries like America don't exist, because America only came into existence 200 years ago, signed into existence in the Declaration of Independence. Countries like Britain, yeah, don't really exist. The tribes, yeah, in those areas were in a primitive form. The countries or the empires that existed at that point in time, 2,500-600 years ago, is the Roman Empire present already? I think at that point in time, it was mainly the Greeks, and then I think Mesopotamian, some of the early empires. That was that long ago. Yeah. So India was not one country at that point in time. It was 16 states, and in one of the states called this survey in Kosala, yeah, Kosala. So Kosala is one of the states, and in that state, there's several other small ones. So this is one of them, Savatthi. Savatthi is actually a country and a state by itself. So I mentioned previously about the name. So my teacher actually covered that. Yeah, and in Chinese, it's called Wenwu. Wenwu. Yeah. So previously mentioned about how this place is a very prosperous place where a lot of goods come in and out. Yeah. Now in modern times, it seems like what's a big deal? You know, every country has trade. Yeah, but in ancient times, 2,000 over years ago, not everywhere has commerce, because you know transport is not so easy. There's a lot of danger in prosperous place in India. Yeah, and at that point in time, the Buddha was at this place called the Anatta Pindikas Park. Have I explained this part? I will explain for the class. Yeah, so those who are here today refer to past lessons. So there are 1,250 monks. Yeah, so the term for monks, bichu or bichu, in the Sanskrit language is bhikshu. In Pali is bhikkhu. Now these are not these are romanized form of the Indian language. Yeah, Indian script is totally different from what we know today. Yeah. So there were translators who did the romanization. So romanization means that they use the Roman letters. Yeah. ABC is basically Roman letters. And then they use the pronunciation more or less as to approximate how it sounds. Yeah. So the original word is bhikshu, and there are three meanings. Yeah, there are three meanings to the word bhikshu. Today we usually translate bhikshu as just monks. Yeah, but the meaning of bhikshu itself is three. The first is qi shi. Yeah, there are three meanings: qi shi, bu mo, and chu er. Yeah, so first qi shi, the arms. Alms eater or alms receiver. Yeah, alms is basically the receiving of things from others. Yeah, so in Singapore, we seldom see this. Yeah, in countries like Thailand, Sri Lanka, Myanmar, then you see the monks in the early morning. They'll don the robe, you know, with the alms bowl, and they will form very long lines going out. If you go to Thailand, the locals would sometimes prepare food in advance and wait in the early morning, yeah, where the monks would come in long files and offer alms food. In the Theravadan tradition, in fact, in the whole Buddhist tradition, it's called Pindapata. Yeah, Pindapata literally means that which is dropped. Yeah, dropped where? Dropped in the bowl. Yeah, there are a lot of different precepts pertaining to this whole process. Yeah. That it must be dropped in the bowl. Drop outside, we will not receive it. Yeah, why? Because there was once it was dropped outside, and the monk took it and ate. Yeah, and then a lot of misunderstanding happened. So that no, only those that is dropped must be dropped inside the bowl. Yeah, so there's a whole set of different rules that came about in the whole process. But this is only one one aspect of receiving alms. Now, receiving alms is not the same as begging. Because if you have seen monks go on alms round, the proper monks or nuns, we don't beg. Yeah, although it seems like going for alms is begging, yeah, but we don't really beg. Because begging is soliciting. So when I was in other centers, I've joined them for alms round before, and they told us very specifically, when you go on alms, we don't beg. Yeah, then what do? We go from houses to houses, or we walk along the street, and if there's someone who approaches us, we'll stop. If they ask us questions, we'll answer. If they offer food that's permitted or allowed, then we receive. And once done, we may give them blessing, and then we'll move on. Yeah. So if we stop by a house and nobody open the door, we don't ding dong, excuse me, hello, I'm a monk, do you have any food? No such thing. So it's quite impossible to do alms round in Singapore. Why? Because HDB flat, ma. All the doors are closed. If we go around, nobody open the door. Yeah, because nobody can see us. Yeah, if we go door to door to door, we can go for the whole day. I think nobody know that we are outside. Yeah, because we are not allowed to ding dong, you know. So sometimes you see in the market, sometimes you see in MRT station. There's some so-called monk standing there. Yeah, and then you go walk past. Sometimes they even come after you, offer you, let's say, I don't know, some Buddha image la, you know, some bracelet la, you know, chanting bead la. Yeah. Then at first maybe they say, give you. Then after you take, then they say $10. That one is not alms. That is not pindapata, because it's not drop. Yeah, because they are, in fact, the way they do it, they are selling things. Yeah, they are selling. It's a transaction already. Yeah. So pindapata, one, it must be voluntary giving. Yeah. Two, we only receive four broad categories of items. Yi, shi, zhu, yao. So yi, ropes, we are allowed to receive through alms. Two, shi, food. Yeah. So every morning is usually food. If every morning we receive clothes, I think we can open supermarket. Yeah. So we don't receive ropes so often also. Yeah. One reason is because in the Buddha's time, ropes is scarce. Yeah. This fabric, now fabric is very, very cheap. Why? Because of the advancement in technology, mass production. In the past, to have a piece of cloth is very valuable. So do you know, monks got robbed last time. No? Our clothes get taken away, you know. Yeah. Can you imagine anyone robbing Sifu of my clothes? Then you see someone wearing my clothes walking around. Quite impossible, right? But in the Buddha's time, it happened, you know. Why? Because in the Buddha's time, our clothes and your clothes is not so different. Not so different in what sense? What we call robes is basically a piece of cloth that we wrap around ourselves. Then in the Indian culture, and not just Indian, in the Mediterranean culture back then, they all wear their clothes this way. A piece of cloth wrapped around. Yeah. It's only with t-shirt, you know, shirt, t-shirt, blouse, design. So it was more or less the same. But then because of that, the monks got robbed, they got robbed. Then what happened? Then the Buddha said, you should cut your cloth and sew it back. So we call it ge jie yi. That means that which is cut up. Meaning, you receive a large piece of cloth, right? You cut it up into smaller pieces, then sew it back. Yeah. Sounds like, Sifu, very mafan like that. Why can't we just use it? Yeah, because if it's one big piece, it's valuable. Yeah. If you go to a tailor, and the tailor say, we have two choices. This one is $100 per meter. That one, $10. Hey, why so cheap? That one is small pieces patched together. Yeah. If they sell you a large piece of cloth and you see that this part, there's a small piece patched together, that part patched together, would you buy? The same as if you have a, like, you know, flooring, those marble flooring, if it's a big tile, it's more expensive. Yeah, terrazzo is basically all the fragments that they fuse together, and then they put the I think other materials to make it into a slab. Yeah, so those things that are smaller pieces, easier to acquire. Yeah, so likewise for the cloth, for the ropes. Yeah, so there's a lot of this very interesting background that happened in the Buddha's time, that until today, some of this as a result shape the way the monastic is. So like our ropes, you see, if you look closely, there are lines here. Yeah, and the proper one are actually cut and then sewn back. Yeah, so we still follow this tradition. Yeah, so the design is still there. But to just receive food in this way, the Buddha said, or my teacher explained, that doesn't qualify you to be considered an alms receiver, because that is just material. Even normal beggar can also stand there and receive alms. Yeah. So to qualify as to be called bhikshu, there must be a second part to the receiving of material. The other one is dharma. So material from the lay people, dharma from who? From the Buddha. So receive dharma from the Buddha. These two together forms the first meaning. Qi shi. Qi shi. So receiving of alms. And that is the first meaning of this bhikshu, number one. Qi shi. So this qi seems to be the same word as the qi gai de qi, but translation. So has that meaning. Second one is bù mo. This bù, 哪个bù? 恐怖的bù. Yeah, 恐怖的bù. So bù mo. Tibo. Yeah, 不磨. So what is this second meaning? Huh? Devil. Yeah. So this in Buddhism, this 磨, because of the word, then we tend to think devil lah, Satan lah, you know, some horrific, you know, and usually like the movie have wings got horns or whatever. In Buddhism, this mo, the full word is not mo, it's mo lo. So mo lo is actually transliteration as well. The original word is mara. So the word mara, the first meaning is tian mo. You know, when you watch movies, sometimes tian mo wai dao. Yeah, a lot of these terms come from Buddhism. So tian mo refers to the heavenly being who is at the topmost of the what we call 欲界顶天. Yeah, so the central desire realm is, there's many, many different parts. So the heavenly being that is at the peak of the central desire realm. But above that, there are actually other heavens. But this being, because it's at that level, cannot see what is higher. So what you cannot see, you are blind towards it. Yeah, so in the sutra, the Buddha described that whoever goes beyond the five courts of sensual pleasure is outside the range of Mara. The Mara is blind as far as you are concerned. What does it mean? For example, all the parents sitting down here, as far as your children is concerned, they are within your Wu Zi San. Yeah. As long as your child wants to play with handphone, it's within your in a way, we can say that not really under your control, but if a person is engrossed with handphone, then the person's life cannot go outside of the handphone, bounded by the handphone. The happiness and the sadness is reliant on the handphone, stuck with the handphone. So similarly, if a person engages in the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the body, seek the sensual pleasure in this way, then the Buddha described these five. These are our senses, right? Yeah. All of you have eyes, right? Not something very chim. A lot of people think, oh, Buddhism very chim. Actually, the Buddha always talk about things that we can directly relate to. Yeah, eyes, everybody have. Ears? Yes. Nose? Tongue? Body? Everybody have. Any of you ghosts? No ghosts here. Ghosts, don't raise your hand. See me after this. I counsel, okay? I provide counseling also. So, corresponding to these five is the form, sound, smell, taste, touch. These five sense objects correspond to the five sense bases. And together, they give rise to the sense consciousness. And when the three come together, we call it contact, forming the condition for feelings. And within the feeling, there can be pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, and neither pleasant or unpleasant feelings. Here, the focus is on the pleasure that arises from the senses. And as long as we are attached to it, we crave for it, we desire it, then someone can pull us along, like the Buddha described, like a carriage that is attached to five horses. Wherever the five horses go, the carriage will go. Our heart, imagine our heart, our mind, tied with a string, and then tied to our eyes, tied to our ears, tied to our nose, tied to our tongue, tied to our body. So wherever our senses are open, then our heart, go out and take a look. What is outside? What is the latest sights and sound? And so on. So in this way, our mind is under the control of the senses. So where does this Mara come in? So Mara is very interesting. Just now I said that Mara, although we shorten it to Mo, Chinese like to shorten things. So I'm not very Chinese. I like to... So Mo in Buddhism is not referring to some devilish Mara, whatever, you know. So this Mo is very interesting. He's like our good friend in school who don't like to study. And this good friend, with the best intent, want us to go and go gai gai, go and watch movie, go and play games, don't study. We don't say that this friend is evil or rather, we don't say that this friend purposely want to sabo us. But this friend has the wrong idea, so thinking that enjoying themselves, ourselves is the most important thing. So want us to enjoy also. So in Buddhism, Mara is like that. Mara is one of the heavenly beings, and just want people to enjoy. But there's a part that is evil also, because the consequences is harming us. Anyone who try to cultivate and actually progress towards the point where this person is out of the boundaries of Mara, then Mara will try to come and disturb. So sometimes students, when they meditate, then they have some difficulty and what, then they ask Sifu, is this Mara? Then I ask them, how often do you meditate? Once a week, no? Then I'm like, don't worry, it's not Mara. Why does Sifu know? Because why do I know? Well, if you only meditate once a week, Mara don't have to come and disturb you. We disturb ourselves more than Mara disturb us. Only when you really put in effort, full time and trying very hard, and especially if you are going to succeed, then Mara will come and disturb you. If you try very hard, but maybe your faculties a bit dull, you are a bit not so witty, or not so wise, so you keep on doing it wrongly, then Mara don't have to come and disturb you also. Mara only disturb those who are progressing and near to the goal already, then they come and disturb. Yeah. So here it's not talking about the bhikshu being disturbed. Here it's saying the bhikshu bu mo, so bu, kong bu de bu, strikes fear in Mara. Yeah, bhikshu has this second meaning. One who strikes fear in Mara. Why? Because, of course, here the word is bhikshu, but it covers both monks and nuns. Yeah. So whoever takes up the robe and undertake this training has a potential to transcend Mara's realm. Yeah. And the training itself is about transcending Mara's realm and control. And that's why it causes fear in Mara. Yeah. It is just like, not direct comparison, but let's do a comparison. Let's say those large, let's say handphone manufacturers, okay? If they know that Sifu is always telling you all, don't have to buy the latest one, old iPhone also can, then they'll be very fearful. Wow, who is this monk? But let's say Sifu is not very successful, tell you all so much, but you all still buy, then they don't have to do anything to me, ma. But if let's say I'm very successful, if let's say all the monks were very successful, yeah, successful in what sense? Successful in telling you all not to buy so much, live a simple life, then all those companies will be very cautious. Wow, one more person become a monk, jialat. We have one more person who advocate a simple life. Then how are you going to sell the product? Then GDP will go down, consumer index will go down, yeah. Then the whole economy will collapse. Yeah. So in the same way, similar way, Mara is concerned when someone undertake this path. Yeah, so that's why this term bhikshu has this second meaning. Bu mo. Third meaning, chu e. Chu e. He who remove wrong or evil. So here there are two components. One is those who are trying to remove. Two is those who have succeeded in removing. Both are considered bhikshu. So in one of the sutra, the Buddha actually said, with reference to this, he who remove evil is called bhikshu. That's why in the past, there was one time when I was explaining one sutra, and then I said, usually when you look at the sutra, the Buddha is giving teachings to the monks or the nuns. But are you all monks and nuns? You're not monks and nuns, or you all have hair, or you all have so many things. You're not monks and nuns. But if I were to then ask you, do you want to remove suffering? Say yes. Yes, of course, you want to remove suffering, right? Do you want suffering? Who wants suffering? Raise your hand. Come up, come in front, and give you some suffering. Nobody wants suffering, isn't it? Yeah. Do you want to remove evil? This one don't say so soon. Huh? Yeah, because we understand evil quite differently. But if you go by this definition, it's not saying that he who wear the robe to remove evil, then he's called bhikshu. It's saying he who remove evil, who is in this process of removing evil, is called bhikshu. Meaning, if you want to be free of suffering, you have to remove evil. And if you are in the process of doing that, then you qualify to be called bhikshu. Oh. But because, then why don't we call you bhikshu? Why do we call you lay people? Because you're not doing it full time. Sometimes you remove, sometimes don't remove. Some evil you want to remove, some evil don't want. Yeah, yeah. Your favorite food. put this evil don't remove. This one, other things remove first lah, Sifu. This one don't remove first. My attachment to my house, my car, my this and that. This one, Sifu, later lah. No rush ma. Sifu, next life lah. It's okay lah. That's why not big shoe yet. So, these three meaning. So in the Buddha's time, there were many monks and nuns also. So my teacher, very interestingly, he actually went through this process of counting. Yeah. So let me share with you his tabulation. So let me see. 气势, okay. Then 大比丘. Yeah, so here 大比丘, so we have 比丘. 比丘 is the big shoe. Then 大比丘. So 大比丘 can be considered with reference to those who are not enlightened. These are the enlightened bhikshu. Yeah. So another one is that it's referring to 大比丘众. That means this is not a small group. Yeah. So a community. Yeah. The term sangha. Are you all familiar with the term sangha? Who is not familiar? Sangha? All familiar? Okay. Quickly raise your hand. Okay, the term sangha. Okay, let me find a place to write. Okay, sangha. So don't worry. There are a lot of terms we don't know. Yeah. Don't worry, they started off this way also. Yeah. I have started off this way also. So Buddha should know. Buddha know or not? No? Don't know? No? Don't know? Four no? Four no? Okay. So there's Buddha, then Dharma, and Sangha. Yeah. So I've mentioned this many times, but it deserves to be mentioned again. So this is what we call the triple gem. And for most Singaporeans, and if I dare say so, most Buddhists, when we first hear this, it may not be the first thing we hear about. Yeah, we may be Buddhists for a long time, but we still haven't heard of this, you know. But actually, this is the core of Buddhism. Yeah, not saying that you are wrong, you know, but you are actually normal. Most Buddhists, I would say maybe 70% of Buddhists, 80%, even 90% of Buddhists, if you go and throw a stone in the street, pong, yeah, Singapore, 33% Singaporeans Buddhism. So if you throw at 3%, statistically should have 1% Buddhist. But don't throw too many times. Later you get caught, go to jail. But throw the proverbial stone, and if you find a Buddhist, chances are that Buddhists don't know what is Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Yeah. And this is the funny thing about Singapore. A person can be a Buddhist for the whole life, but never heard of this. You know. Yeah. So what is this? Buddha is Buddhala. You know Buddha? The person, the young prince in the Buddha's, 2,500-600 years ago, he gave up the palace, his position, in search of the truth, and very importantly, found the truth. There are some crazy people who go and come out with a video saying, oh, the Buddha actually didn't find the truth, still looking for the truth. If he's still looking for the truth, then how come there's a religion called Buddhism? So anyway, the Buddha started off practice, and then he attained enlightenment. He became awakened. Yeah, that's why he's called the Buddha. Because the term Buddha literally means awakened one. Yeah. An awakened one is called a Buddha. Yeah. Chinese is called Fu. Yeah. But Fu is actually not a Chinese character. Fu is what we call Yin Yi. Transliteration. What is transliteration? For example, the favorite example I like to use is, you know, George Bush, the president George Bush. What is his Chinese name? Bu Shi, right? Bush, Bu Shi, yeah. And Taiwan and China, they use slightly different one. One is Bu Shi, one is Bu Xi, yeah. So this is called the process of transliteration. We use the target language to produce the sound. So we capture only the sound. So we do transliteration for names of places, names of people, names of certain objects. Yeah? Or if the word has some meaning that is very rich that cannot be found in the target language, then we transliterate. Yeah. So for the full word is Phu Tuo. Phu Tuo. And when they did the transliteration, it's very interesting. What is your dialect? Cantonese. Cantonese. Tim Kong. Phu Tuo. Fat. Bai Fat. Fat what? So that's an interesting thing. Because in Hokkien, we usually say Hu Zhou also. What is your dialect? Lim? Hokkien also. So Hokkien is? Usually we say Hu Zhou. So Fat Zhou, Hu Zhou is actually Fu Zhu. The reason why we call Fu Zhu is because we consider Buddha as the origin, the source of all the masters. So the Zhu come from this. But it's actually not Buddha. Yeah, the proper term is Phu Tuo. I don't know what is the implication for Cantonese, but for Hokkien it's very interesting. Yeah, I've mentioned to you all many times, what is Hokkien, what is Phu Tuo in Hokkien? Put Tuo. Really Put Tuo, not Put Tuo. Put Tuo. Put. Yeah. And what is so interesting thing about this is that if you read this in Chinese, in Mandarin, there's no link to the word Buddha. But when you pronounce it as Put Tuo, then it sounds like another term called Buddha. Buddha is the singular term for Buddha. So when the masters did transliteration, they considered grammar. So it's quite amazing how 2,000 over years ago when they did transliteration, they knew about all these things. Now, in Buddhism, to become a Buddhist, it basically means that you take Buddha as your teacher. This is how it is in the Buddha's time until today. When we say you are Buddhist, what does it mean? Actually, it means you take Buddha as your teacher. That's why we call Phu Di Zi. The proper term for Buddhist is Phu Di Zi. Buddhist is actually a modern term. Basically, Buddha put in IST. Buddhism is Buddha, then or Buddhi, then put in ISM. This is the convenient way of, you know, forming words. But the original term is Buddha and the disciple. And Buddhism in Chinese, Phu Jiao. What is Phu Jiao? So the teachings of the Buddha. This is the religion that is centered on the teachings of the Buddha. What is the teaching of the Buddha? The Dharma. I won't go into the full detail. There are a lot of past sessions where I explain all these terms in detail. So please go online to look at it. But basically, Buddha, his teaching. So number one, the Buddha. Number two, his teaching. Number three, the community of monks and nuns and the enlightened ones together form the Sangha. And this tree is what we take refuge in. So to become a Buddhist, basically this is the process. Now, for those who are new, I encourage you to go and look at some of the past video, but don't just look at our video, in case we are cult group. encourage you to go and search Singapore Buddhist Federation. You go and look at buddhanet.net. And you go and read up what Buddhism is about. Then you have a clearer picture. Yeah. But of course, why do I say that in case I'm a cult group? Actually, a cult group wouldn't say that. But if I tell you I'm not cult, cult will say that they are not cult also. So no point for me to tell you whether I'm cult. You go and read yourself. So, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then how do we end up talking about this? Okay. So, the Da Bi Chu Zhong. So, in the Buddha's time, when the community itself, when we use the word Sangha, the word Sangha, it refers to the literally means an assembly. But the Buddha typically refer to Sangha as talking about the assembly of monks and nuns. And many times referring to the monks who were present. Why? Because it just so happened that in the Buddha's time, there were more monks than nuns. So Sangha, this Da Bi Chu Zhong, Da Bi Chu Zhong would refer to the Sangha or the assembly that is larger than four or five. So in my teacher's explanation, he mentioned about 4 person, 5 person. In the Buddha's time, the basic set to form a community, an assembly, is 10. 10 was the minimum quorum. Nowadays, when you set up a society, you have a proper meeting, then you talk about quorum, right? Talk about the number of participants and so on. Actually, in the Buddha's time, they have such a concept. So when we have a formal meeting, we will call for assembly, and then we will do a head count. To make sure that we form quorum. So the minimum to make certain decisions is 10. But at a later point, the Buddha gave allowance that in some remote places where there's not so many monks, not so many monks, they still must make decisions. So what happened? The Buddha allowed, if you have 5, you can start to make decisions. If you have 4, you can make minor decisions, but you cannot make all the decisions. So 4, you can make some decisions. 5, you can make all the decisions if you are in a remote place. In a major place where there are a lot of monks and nuns, then you still need a 10. So here, how many are there? 1,250人, 1,250, fulfill what we call a Mahasangha. So, Da Bi Chu Zhong, the Mahasangha. Mahasangha. So, okay, that's about this. Some other text, and then he even go through the early part of the Buddha's teaching. So initially, are you all familiar with how the Buddha started? At first, how many monks were there? 5. The first 5 monks, the first 5 ascetics. So the first 5. Then later, there were the Prince Yasa and the 50 or 60 of his friends joined together. 60. Then later on, Venerable Sariputra and Venerable Mahamoggallana came. They brought 250 with them. Then later, Venerable, Venerable Mahakashapa, he came, and then he brought an even larger group. So all together, it went past 1,000. So my teacher used that as a basis to say, based on that, this sutta must have been at some point already. Another thing about this is that by the time there is this place, Ji Shu Ji Gu Du Yuan, Anatta Pindika's Park, Jeta's Grove, by the time there is this term, it means that it has already reached a certain point in the development. Because Anatta Pindika didn't offer it instantly. It was after some time that it was offered to the Buddha. Okay. Okay. So, so at that point in time, 十四尊, so 十四尊十时, so start off with 一时, yeah, at one point at a time, yeah. So what time was that? There was a time where there's the Buddha in that place, and then there's a Sangha and so on and so forth. Then here again, 十, yeah. So then further, at a certain time, and now this is another time, a lot of time. Although Indians don't seem to care about time, but seems to have a lot of time also. Here, this is another reference to time. What is this time? This is a time where it is proper for the Buddha and the monks to go for alms. What is a time? From break of dawn, which is about 6 plus 7, all the way till before noon. So this is about 5 to 6 hours where the monks and later on nuns can go on alms round. So it is at that time where 四尊十时, it's time for the Buddha to consume his meal, so he went out on alms round. And what did he do? 早已持钵. So have I explained this part? I have. Some say yes, some say no. Some don't know. Okay, I quickly go through this part, because I seem to have explained this part already. So 早已持钵, so he wear his robes, or held on to his robes, and then held his bowl, alms bowl. My teacher said that when he attained enlightenment, the beings, the Siddha Tenwang, they offered 4 stone bowls, and then the Buddha combined them into 1 stone bowl. According to my teacher, it's very heavy. And so entered Savati for alms round. So this 早已持钵, so every time you come for SGC, you see Sifu wearing. Even when I go out for lunch, I will bring this along. Yeah, I will usually bring this along. So in some communities, we practice this, where anywhere we go, we'll bring along our this precept robes. Yeah. And this is part of the practice where in the Buddha's time, actually, it's not just this set, because this set is actually the qi yi or wu yi, and it's the lower rope and the upper rope. So wu yi is the lower rope, qi yi is the upper rope. Yeah. And then there is the jiu yi, which is the double layered outer rope. So when the monks or nuns, they go out on alms round, they will wear the lower, upper, and then they will put on the outer rope, yeah, to go on alms round. A few reasons why. Number one is, in the early days, even at this point where there is the Anatta Pindika's park, yeah, there's already a place offered to the Buddha. There's no private quarters, there's no room, no locker, no cupboard, no. So don't imagine it as like a monastery today. In those days, they literally only have their robes, their alms bowl, and when they wake up, it's under this tree. When they come back, maybe not this tree anymore, it's another tree. So anytime they go on alms round, they have to bring everything together. Yeah. Only under certain special allowance, then we are allowed to leave things behind. Yeah. Why? So the Buddha said that anytime you move off, you should not be it should not be such that later, you know, in case if you need to go to another place, you have to come back and then, you know, make a lot of round trips. Yeah, so anytime we go off as it is, yeah, ready to go to another place, to teach or to learn or to move to another place. Why? Because in the Buddha's time, that is the life of a bhikshu, wandering from places to places. So 早已持钵入社会大臣弃时, so go for alms. So, 与其城中次第其矣. So, within this city, So, 与其城中次第其矣，还至本处。So, within this city, going according to order. So, what is this 次第其矣? When you go on arms round, likewise, it's not that you suka suka one, you know. You go on arms round, then you know, this house always have chubby hood. Go there first. Then after that, the next house, every time, you know, tasteless bland food, skip, go, cross the other side. The other side got kari bihun, kari chai. Then after that, that side got, you know, some good food again. So you just go here, then run there, then cross over to the other side. Then after that, no, cannot. If you go on arms round, you have determined before you go, sometimes it's even assigned. Yeah, where because if not everybody chong for the cha bi hun, then that place after a few rounds run out of food. Yeah, then the rest, it's not that we are afraid of running out of food, no. But it's stipulated that we have to go in sequence. Why? So that everybody have a chance to offer. It is with this consideration, you know, yeah, that we give everybody equal chance to meet a Sangha and to do offering. Yeah. So we have this rule that if we go to a new place where there are existing Sangha who are residing there for a while, we should go there, you know, like halo a bit, then ask them and consult them where are the places to go on arms round. One, because in the Buddha's time, if you go to some lorong where they are anti-Buddhist one, they'll throw stick and stone at you, you know. They will kick you, you know. In the Buddha's time, such things happen. So we will go there, consult what are the lorongs to avoid. Yeah, what are the avenues that you shouldn't go? Yeah, over there, no Buddhists. You go there, you walk here, walk there, walk the whole day, no food. Yeah, don't bother. They are not. They don't support Buddhist monks. Yeah, or this place, the whole row, they are all Buddhists. But some of them, they are so devoted. The Sangha has decided, don't go on arms round. Funny. If they are so devoted, why don't go on arms round? So sometimes the Sangha may decide. 学家, meaning that this household, they are so devoted, as long as you go, they will give you something. They will offer some food. Even if they 山穷水尽, even if they have to go and borrow, they will borrow it to give you. No? Yeah, some are so pious. So the Sangha said, if we know that some lay family, they are so devoted, we should not harm them. Only when they tell us that they are okay now, they have enough for themselves, and they can offer us a bit, then we go. Otherwise, if they are at that state, we don't go. Because the moment we go, they feel paiseh, they feel obliged. So we actually have this rule, to protect the lay community from overburdening them. So all this, and a lot of others, a lot of other rules pertaining to this. So 次第, according to the sequence. So if let's say, even for the Buddha, he has decided, okay, this is the path he's going, he'll go by this path. And it is said that for the Arahants, if they go by this path, they will go for only 7 houses. If first house, no, it's still counted. Second house, still no. Up to 6 house, no, jialat. But Arahant, no problem. Yeah. 7 house, also nobody offer, then they will just go back with the empty bowl. Yeah. And reflect on conditions. Yeah. 因缘如此. Today, no. Yeah. But of course, in the sutta, it also says that when they come back, they will often make sure that everybody have some. They will share. But sometimes, it's not like, you know, today there's a monastery, you will go back to the monastery. Last time, you go back to that forest, you go to that village, happen that you are only person, satu orang, satu bhikshu, go walk, come back, empty, nobody to share with you. So how? Yeah. Life is uncertain. That's why lay people have money, ma. Have money? Don't give me. I go Kofu lo. I go Ding Tai Fung lo. So sometimes people ask like, Shifu, then you all accept ang pao, right? Yeah. But you have to be very lucky or unlucky to find me in a food court ordering food by myself. Yeah. We usually don't go out on our own to go and get food. Yeah. This is in a way a part of our practice. We don't how do you call that? In fact, for some, if you offer a meal, you ask them what they want, they may choose, but many times they will not choose as well. Whatever, okay, can. Yeah. Why? So that it's in spirit as close as it is to going for alms. Because when you go for alms, you cannot choose. Sometimes you have no food offered. Sometimes this house, cha bi hun, that house, cha mi le. Maybe you don't like cha mi le. You want cha peng le, then no cha peng le. Every day no cha peng how? Or maybe every day cha mi fan until but then how? But you have to take it. But how is that cultivation? And that's actually a form of cultivation. Why? Because normal life, our life is all about choosing. Choose what we like to satisfy ourselves. So starting from the early morning, the monastic life is part of cultivation. That when they go on alms, even that is cultivation. To go out mindfully, when they receive food, receive with gratitude and with equanimity. Whatever is offered, they receive, and then they give blessing. Yeah. And not, auntie, lu cha peng bo ha. Oh, bo ha. Go see me ha. Cannot. Supposed to be done in silence. So, 次第其, yeah. So, once you have received enough, then you come back. Yeah. Not more than that. And when we go on alms round, we use this 持钵, the alms bowl. It's also in the Chinese translation, it's called 音量器. 音量器. So what is 音量器? So 音量器 basically means the bowl which is according to your needs. I think I mentioned this before, big, small and medium. So 这个饭食器收一波洗足以扶坐而坐. So after the food has been consumed, then fold the robes, then keep it, then wash the feet. So why wash the feet? In ancient India, even today, if you go to India, very dusty. Outside it's very dusty. When you come back, even if you wear shoe, wear socks, you must wash your feet. In many ancient culture, there is such a description: offering water, not just to drink but to wash the feet. Today, many times it becomes a ceremony. But in the past, it is part and parcel of life. Come back, you must wash your feet. Why? Dirty ma. So, 扶坐而坐. This 扶坐而坐, this is what? So, this 扶坐而坐, my teacher says, then the Buddha will sit in the full lotus, and then to do what? Yeah. Not sit down and kiao ka. The moment he sit down is cross-legged. In that position, for what purpose? Meditate. For us, there is a difference between whether you are in meditation or not in meditation. Even when he's up and about, when he's walking around, even when he's talking, his mind is in samadhi. What does it mean? It means that his mind is not scattered. You mean our mind is usually scattered? Ah. Like sometimes when you're sitting here and Sifu is talking, right? Then Sifu talking about first meaning, then after that, wah, 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 wah. The sound become wah, 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 wah. Then suddenly, eh? Oh, third meaning is, eh? Second meaning, what is the second meaning? Ah, so our mind is scattered, not focused. Not focused. Yeah. Sometimes, better still, you go out with your friends, go out with your family, then you're talking. Then, nowadays, at least you can see, no, your son and daughter, they are focused on their phone. Yeah, so a lot of samadhi nowadays. Yeah, but focus on the phone. But sometimes even if they're not focused on the phone, yeah, when you're talking to them, then they but you see the eyes, ah, 双眼无神, you know. They're like they're staring blankly at you. Yeah. What happened? Again scattered. We are not focused attention in what we are doing most of the time. So for us, we have a distinction between whether we are in samadhi, we are in focus, in concentration, and not in concentration. Yeah. When we sit down, even when we cross our leg and we sit down, we may be successful, we may not be successful. Yeah. Like early on when we sit, and then Sifu say, when breathing in, be mindful and present with your breath. Know when you are breathing in. Do we all know all the time? I would say sometimes, I'm sure you know, right? Sometimes, actually don't know. Sometimes, breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Oh, aircon very cold. Eh? Breathe in, breathe out. Maybe for some of you, breathe in, breathe out. How come we sit here? Just now sit already. Don't sit here. Hear aircon blowing until your neck is very uncomfortable. Then some of you all maybe, don't want to sit here, I want to sit on the chair. A lot of thoughts, you know. For us, we have this distinction. Even when we are sitting, our mind sometimes in concentration, sometimes not concentrated. Sometimes focused, sometimes not focused. But it is said that for the Buddha and the Arahants, their mind is always in a certain state. In what state? Present, mindful, and focused. Yeah. So even when they are doing things. Is it possible? We can try. We can try. So my teacher said that whole paragraph, it is a bit like a preamble describing what happened. But according to some masters, they say that this is actually an expression of the teaching. What is the expression? So in the Buddhist teaching, we have the three phases of learning. 戒定慧. Yeah, 戒定慧. So the early part, so 早衣持波弃食, this is 戒. Yeah, that means regulation, yeah, how to live your life and so on. Then 伏坐而坐, this is 定. Yeah, then up to the next part, then 慧. Yeah, so what is 戒定慧? Precepts, then samadhi, then wisdom. So this is the sequence. And through this sequence, then a person can go from unenlightened to being enlightened. Yeah. Enlightened about what? Awakened about what? Enlightened about the way things are. Yeah. About the nature of our existence. Why is it that sometimes we are happy, sometimes we are not so happy? Why is it that today someone said something to me, I'm okay? Tomorrow, the same thing said, how come I'm not okay? How come the same thing said by this person, I'm okay? By that person, I'm not okay. Why? Yeah. Sometimes we feel that, not happy, really, what you want. Yeah. But if we sit down and we think about it, hey, strange. How come it's like that? Sometimes like this, sometimes like that. So the Buddha said, if we develop ourselves to have wisdom, then we can have an answer. Then we can be in control, we can manage our inner peace. Our peace, our happiness will not be under the control of others. Then we will stop living our life like the aircon. Aircon, 忽冷忽热, yeah. Under whose control? Whoever hold on to the controller. Yeah. Do we live our life in this way? yeah, let people control, it's up to us. So at that point in time, I'll just go through in brief. Next 2 weeks later, we'll come back and go into more detail. Shi, again, shi, there's a yi shi, then a shi, then shi. So when is this time, this shi? This is when everybody has finished their meal and then seated in samadhi, ready for teachings, ready. At that point when everybody is ready for teachings, then what happened? Zhang Lao Shi Puti. So this is one of the monks, Shi Puti. Yeah. So this is not just some venerable. This is a Mahathera. Yeah. Zhang Lao. Yeah. So Zhang Lao should have been ordained for quite some time. Oops, sorry. So ordained for some time already, which also means that the Buddha has been giving teachings for some time. Yeah. If it's within the first 4 years, 5 years, cannot have a Zhang Lao. Yeah. Because in Buddhism, when someone is considered Mahathera, Zhang Lao, elder, it's not by the age. Yeah. If it's by the age, then the Buddha immediately ordained Venerable Mahakashapa, who is even older than him, immediately Zhang Lao. But in Buddhism, no. It goes by the number of years the person has trained in Buddhism, in the Dharma. So this Zhang Lao Shi Puti, he has already trained under the Buddha for some number of years, minimally 10, 15, or even 20 years already. So this is after some time. So in the Chinese Mahayana tradition, we say Shi Puti Jie Kong Di Yi. So he has each of the Da Dizi, they have different aspects of them. They have what are you doing? Li Jie De Jie. So what did he do? Zai Da Zhong Zhong Ji Chong Zuo Qi. So in the whole assembly. So whole assembly sitting there, yeah, in samadhi, and then he arises from the assembly. Yeah. And then Pian Tan Yu Jian Yu Si Zhao Di He Zhang Gong. Yeah. So this is quite a classic process. And if I were to demonstrate to you, it's very interesting. So first of all, stand up, right? Then Pian Tan Yu Jian. So you think about it, So far, whenever you see us, when we wear our robes, it's always pian tan yu jian. That means right shoulder exposed. But actually, can you see my right shoulder? Cannot see. You want to expose or not? Can you imagine if now Sifu like that? When we, Sifu, you want to do what? But in the Buddha's time, they do that. Which means that normally when they are seated, their robes actually cover both sides. Then when they want to address the Buddha, to express their respect, there are different sources that describe this. One is that to show the right shoulder, bare, is to acknowledge that the person you are addressing, yeah, is someone that you respect and is truthful and so on. Yeah. So this is linked to the circumambulation, where we go by the clockwise direction. When you go by clockwise direction, your right shoulder is naturally towards the object. Yeah. So there are some of these subtle nuances. And so they will expose the right shoulder. Yeah. So in the Buddha's time, when they are in the forest, many times their robes cover both sides when they are doing their own meditation. Otherwise, 着凉啊. Yeah. Although can be quite hot also on daytime. So when they are addressing the Buddha, they will adjust the ropes and cover on one side, exposing the other side. Another explanation for why the right side is that it means servitude towards the other person. Yeah, that when imagine Sifu's rope is covered all inside, then I want to serve you something, both hands stuck. You know what I mean? So by exposing one hand, this hand is free to do things for you, something like that. So, 偏袒右肩，右膝着地. Yeah, so right knee on the floor. Yeah, so it's not both knees. 右膝着地，合掌恭敬而白佛言. Something like that. So you can imagine the scene. Yeah, in the whole assembly, then one senior monk, yeah, senior, no, but stand up, adjust the ropes, kneel down on one side, and do this. This is the scene. So, when you all see Sifu and you want to talk to me, do you do this? No. Hey, but I tell you, this is still practiced today, you know. In Sri Lanka, sometimes in Singapore, when the Sri Lankans are in Singapore, they meet Bante, they do this, no? When they see Sifu, they sometimes also do this, no? They also kneel down one knee, then they even touch my feet, no? First time one of them want to touch my feet, what are you trying to do? Yeah, they will do this to express their respect, yeah, that they bow down to your feet, yeah, and they put their forehead to your, they'll touch your, it's not that they like that, go and touch, they just tap your feet, yeah, with their hand, yeah, so it's a very high form of respect, no, because your feet, our feet versus our head, feet is the dirtiest part, then they use their hand, touch it, you know, and they put their head close to your feet. Yeah, until today, Sri Lankans still do this. When I was in India, I met some Indian. I don't know them, you know. They do this also. Yeah, and they are not even Buddhist. They are Hindus. Yeah, they're very respectful. Yeah, so it's very interesting, that culture. Yeah. When we come back, I will go through a bit more into the implication of this text. This is the opening, yeah, the opening of the whole sutra. Yeah, so the earlier part is what we call the shifen, yeah, the preamble. Then here is getting into the zhenzhongfen, which is the main part, starting of the main part where the teaching is given. Yeah, so the opening question. Venerable Subhuti asks, Si yo si zun, Ru lai san fu nian zhu pu sa, san fu zhu pu sa, si zun, san lan zi san di ren, fa niang do lo san miao san pu ti sing, ying yun he zhu, yun he tiao fu qi sing. So the gist of this is, this Venerable Subhuti asks the Buddha, that the Buddhas, very skillfully keep in mind all these bodhisattvas. Who are the bodhisattvas? Those who are aspiring and practicing to attain Buddhahood. The Buddhas, take special notice of them, you know, keep them in mind, give them advice, urge them. Yeah. But for those, san nan zi san ni ren, so this is interesting, san nan zi san ni ren. So sometimes, when we come to Buddhism, we may feel, Buddhism also, like many religions, very patriarchal. But actually, in many sutras, 善男子善女人, enlightenment, men, women can cultivate, no problem. We don't say, only men, you're a woman, what use? No, a lot of female disciples have accomplishment. So 善男子善女人, whether you are layman or laywoman, no problem. Yeah. But distinction, not 二男子二女人, must be 善, not the 不义, 善, but you know, are you wholesome? Wholesome man, wholesome woman. And what does the wholesome man, wholesome woman do? 发阿耨多罗三藐三菩提心. What is this? 阿耨多罗三藐三菩提. 阿耨多罗, unsurpassed. 三藐三菩提, the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment mind. What is this? Basically, you have made the aspiration. You don't want to live your life just pursuing the 5C, 10C, whatever C. You want to live your life not just for yourself, but for something loftier, something more worthy. Yeah. Live your life for what? You live your life to bring yourself to perfection in order to become a Buddha, so that attaining Buddhahood is not an end also. It is so that one can then be of service, of help to all sentient beings. Yeah. So this Venerable Subhuti asks, for such an individual, yeah, 善男子善女人, 发尿多罗三藐三菩提心, these are actually 菩萨. Yeah. But Bodhisattva, there are those who just started, those who are already practicing, those who have reached a high stage. Those here, 发阿耨多罗三藐三菩提心, those who just started, just have this heart, I want to be Buddha. Yeah, but how? How what? 因云何住? How should this person abide? 云何调伏其心? Here, this 云何住, 云何 is 古文, how? Yeah? 因云何住? How should he abide? Abide, what am I about? 师父, 住, 住 means where to stay, ma? So should he stay in Woodlands or Toa Payoh? Should he move his house? No. This 住 is talking about how should he abide his mind? How should he cultivate his mind, in other words? 因云何住? 云何调伏其心? 调伏, to mitigate, to overcome, to tune his mind. Why must you tune your mind? Because although here, these are wholesome people who have decided to attain Buddhahood, but not there yet, no. So what happened? Today I want to attain, tomorrow, sian, don't want. The next day, I want. Then after that, quarrel with the children, don't want. Then the next day, I want. Then after that, go to Monday, go to office, I shall be a Bodhisattva at work. Then go to the office, your boss give you a lot of rubbish. What for, man? I live my life for myself, lah. Live for you for what? Huh? All these rascal, horrible people. So, if we allow that to happen, then can our original wish to attain Buddhahood, to help all sentient beings, starting with ourselves, our family, and so on, can we succeed? Hard to succeed. Yeah. So as a result, have to learn where should we put our mind? How should we train our mind? 云何调伏其心? Yeah, 云何调伏其心? How to overcome the mind? Overcome what kind of mind? Sometimes our mind want to be Buddha, sometimes don't want to be Buddha, want to be jerk. Yeah. Want to kick out. Sometimes we want to kick out sim, not spacing. Yeah. So how to overcome all this? So 2 weeks later when we come back, we'll look at this. Okay? Time's up. Next week there will be a session also, but we are having this once every two weeks. Yeah. When we go through some of these texts, Sifu, just now you talk about Buddha la, Bodhisattva, I don't even know what that is. Yeah, but it's okay, we just learn. To begin with, in my opinion, even if we are not monks or nuns, we haven't even know what is a Bodhisattva. Minimally, a Bodhisattva is someone who wants to help others, who wants to be free of limitations in helping others. Yeah. So we ask ourselves, do we want to care for our loved ones? Of course we want. Do we want to be of help to our loved ones? Yes, we want. But sometimes we can, sometimes we cannot. Sometimes we want, sometimes we don't want. When we are in a good mood, we want. When in a bad mood, don't want. Depends on our mood. So this is not reliable. Yeah. And because of this, it can bring us trouble. So learning the Dharma can help us overcome all this. If there are no questions, we put our palms together and we do dedication.
愿消三藏诸烦恼,
愿得智慧真明了,
普愿罪障悉消除,
世世常行菩萨道。阿弥陀佛，起立。